This conference is being recorded.
Hello, my name is Jackie Grabus-Bunker, and I want to welcome you all to this Just About Perfect teleclass. Our teleclasses are offered live, and they're also recorded and archived so that members who are unable to participate in the live calls will have an opportunity to listen at their convenience. Today, we're delighted to have Harry Tucker, who will be presenting Authenticity, Being True to Ourselves and Others. Harry Tucker has provided business strategy guidance, global technology adoption strategy, and leadership incubation guidance to Wall Street and Fortune 50 companies for over 25 years, and was the co-founder of an award-winning software company in New York. In his many years of consulting to Fortune 50, or Fortune 50 companies, Harry has come to the conclusion that many of the challenges we experience are not due to business or technology-related issues, but are in fact due to the lack of authenticity within ourselves and between individuals. This lack of authenticity impacts how we view ourselves, how we present ourselves to the world, and what we expect of the world in return. In addition, Harry is a contributing author to A Complaint-Free World, How to Stop Complaining and Start Enjoying the Life You've Always Wanted, and the recently published 97 Things Every Project Manager Should Know, Collective Wisdom from the Experts. So, Harry, how does being inauthentic impact our lives?
It's an interesting question. Thank you for asking it. Before I get to that question, I'd love to talk about what authenticity means. What does the word actually mean? And in a few moments, I'm going to be joined by my friend Leonard Simcheck, and I'll talk about Leonard's background in just a moment. But this is a favorite subject of mine and Leonard's, the actual definition of the word authenticity. And because it's a confusing word to many, and I asked a friend not too long ago what he thought the word authentic meant. And he came back with this definition. And the definition that he provided was truthfulness of origins, attributions, commitments, sincerity, devotion, and intentions. And I thought, wow, that is just too confusing. I don't even know what that means. And so I thought about it, and the way I would describe authenticity is, are my actions and my thoughts in alignment with my core values and beliefs? And so if the things that I say and the things that I do are in alignment with those, with my core values and my core beliefs, then I believe I'm being authentic to myself. And then it allows me to be authentic with others. So how I interact with you, what I say to you, what I expect from you are pretty consistent with my core values and my core beliefs. So if you observe the actions that I undertake or the things that I do, the things that I do don't come as a surprise. Now, being authentic is an interesting thing because when we start as children, we're all born authentic. So as we've all experienced children, if a child is grumpy, they express their grumpiness in different ways. If they're happy, they express their happiness in different ways. If they choose not to do something or if they want to do something really badly, they just say it or do it. And as we move through life and we acquire what we think of as life skills, we actually lose some of that sense of authenticity, that trueness to one's core values, core beliefs, and core interests. And the reasons are many. I mean, if we think about the lives that we live, we have so many expectations that are placed upon us. We have expectations of folks in the workplace. We have expectations from perhaps a life partner or from other peers or friends or sometimes even complete strangers. And so what happens is over time, and it's a gradual process, we start to add little bits here and there to a facade that becomes our alter ego. And over time, it becomes very difficult to ascertain what our true self really is. Now, Nathaniel Hawthorne had a great quote about this that I really like, and he said, "No man can wear one face to himself and another to the multitude without finally getting bewildered as to which may be true." And I think what happens sometimes is when we work on this facade so that we don't disappoint others or other reasons, at some point we actually lose sight of who we are. And I think to a certain extent we actually start to believe the facade that we've constructed. We actually start to believe our own, what I will call baloney. And so one of the things I'm really excited to explore with Leonard tonight and with everyone else on the call is, you know, how does this happen? How do we get out of alignment with our true self? And, you know, what is the impact of that? And how do we return to our core selves? I mean, I think we all can say with some level of personal honesty that we are not always our true selves to everyone, and we're not always our true selves to others. And the reasons that we would provide, I think, many times are valid from our own life context and life perspective. But I think if we allow the facade to become too complex and the construct itself to be too complex, what happens is that at some point we become so disconnected from our true self that that we get what I would call an incongruence or disconnectedness that starts to take root inside. I'll give one personal example, and as I give this example, I invite you all to think about your own story and your own life. For many years, as many of you know, I worked on Wall Street. And for all the years that I worked on Wall Street, I enjoyed them. For many years, I enjoyed them. And, you know, it was financially rewarding. There was glamour. There was glitz. There was all of this great stuff. But at some point, I started to feel hollow. And I started to realize, you know, this is not the person that I am. Some of the people that I associate with, now, that's not to say that everyone on Wall Street is not a good person. They're all great people. But some people that I associated with reflected values that I didn't resonate with. And so the longer I worked on Wall Street, the more disenchanted I became with Wall Street. And that was when I realized that I had become inauthentic to myself and to others. So I was going through this make-believe world. And the more I went through this make-believe world, the more unhappy I became. I really became disenchanted with my work. It started to trickle down into other things. It impacted my personal relationships. In fact, at some point, it even impacted my own self-confidence, my own belief in myself, because I became caught in this trap. And the trap was the persona that I projected to the world had to be a certain persona, a man in control, a man who did things in a certain way and who had certain values in order to align with the values that other people that I worked with had. And what was interesting was the more I projected this persona, the more I knew it wasn't me. And like I said, it impacted my personal or my professional growth. It impacted my personal interactions with everyone. And as it started to eat away inside, I can say now, as I look back on it, that a depression set in, because I knew this wasn't me. But I didn't know how to get out of it. I felt trapped. I thought, if I say to people, this is not me, I want to be who I am, then perhaps this would impact my employment. Perhaps this would impact my friendships. Perhaps, you know, my life partner would be disappointed in who I am. And so you get caught up in this really strong structural tension of, you know, I know that this is not who I am, but how do I get out of this? You know, I feel trapped now. I feel unable to get out. And in speaking with so many people, I've come to discover that we all experience this to some level. And I think we can all, it's important for us to understand, you know, the symptoms of being caught in this trap, this layer of inauthenticity. And it's important to understand the impact of it and how we can get out of it. And with that thought, I'd like to bring a friend of mine into the call. And I'm going to introduce Leonard, but I want to tell one story. After I introduce you, Leonard, I want to tell one story because something you suggested to me had a huge impact on my life, and I'd like to share it with some other folks. So joining me tonight is a gentleman by the name of Leonard Simcheck. And Leonard and I became introduced to each other, I will say by accident, although I don't believe in accidents. I don't believe in coincidence. Leonard had written a blog a couple of years ago, and I was Googling for something, and I forget what I was Googling for, and I found Leonard's blog. And as I have expressed in earlier calls, when I find an author that I like or who has made an impact in my life or a writer or anyone like that, I tend to reach out to the person and I say thank you. And so I reached out to Leonard. I said, thank you, Leonard. That was an incredible piece that you wrote, et cetera, et cetera. And Leonard wrote me back and said, thank you very much. And so that was, I thought, the end of the interaction. And about a year ago, Leonard reached out to me with a project, and we'll talk about the project a little later. But through that project, Leonard and I got to know each other very well. And Leonard and I got to know each other, I was struggling with a new round of inauthenticity. I was struggling with some personal things, and some of you may resonate with this as well. You know, here I am. I am allegedly the man under in control of his life, and everything is great. But I had some personal struggles that were really weighing me down. And you know, it was one of those situations where the people in my spheres of influence just shrugged it off. Well, either Harry doesn't really have a problem, or he'll figure it out because, you know, he has it under better control than any of us would ever have it. And the truth was that I didn't. And the thing was, I actually believed my own baloney, as I said earlier. And, you know, so all of these people believed I had it under control, and I thought, you know, if I let it be known that I don't have it under control, what will the impact be of that? And so I became trapped in this authenticity structural tension. And so I was sharing this with Leonard one day, and Leonard said, you know, what you need to do is you need to write down your thoughts, be completely transparent, and share it with people who are close to you. And so I thought, boy, I don't know if I can do that. And I thought, but I reached a point where the structural tension was so great that I said, yes, you know, I'm going to do it. And so I wrote a note, and I put everything down that I was struggling with. And I was very honest and transparent about what the struggle was doing to me. And I sent it out to close friends and family. And the response that I received just blew me away. And it lifted such a load off my shoulders to be able to admit that, you know, the person you think I am is not that same person. And I'm a person who sometimes needs help also. And so I was able to engage in a different kind of authentic dialogue with the people who were important to me. And because of that, and because of Leonard's guidance, I was able to work with other people to help me get back to my authentic self. And so it's an interesting exercise that I recommend. And there is at least one other person on this call, and I'm waving to you, Peter, in Calgary. You and I helped a mutual friend in Spain, and he did the same thing, and the results were incredible. I'm going to stop talking for a second because I'd like Leonard to come on the call. Are you there, Leonard?
I'm here, Harry.
I'm just going to make you blush for a second, Leonard. You have profound credentials. You're a psychotherapist, an educator, an author for over 35 years. Leonard was the director of the Family Therapy Program at the Marriage and Family Center in Sydney, Australia. Later served as a senior affiliate therapist with the Family Institute at Northwestern University. And tomorrow, Leonard is pushing, or not pushing, he's promoting his new book, The Roadmap Home, Your GPS to Inner Peace. Welcome to the call, Leonard.
Thank you, Harry. Love to be here, and I really enjoyed listening to your presentation about authenticity. It was a beautiful way of laying the groundwork.
Well, and thank you for that, Leonard. You know, something, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, when you told me or suggested to me some time back to outline the things that I struggled with, to be totally authentic, I mean, I was honest with you then, and I'll be honest with you now, it was a very difficult thing to do. And, you know, to lower that facade, that persona, to be totally transparent. What do you think, Leonard, are the reasons that we struggle with not wanting to be authentic?
Well, I think you set the groundwork when you talked about the whole concept of authenticity, that we, over time, we start losing our true self. When you mentioned that, you know, we're born totally authentic, you know, we're distressed, we cry, or if we're happy, we giggle, and we're totally transparent about who we are. Over time, because of our conditioning and our adaptation to our family, our culture, and our society, we start downloading all these belief systems. And we start, in a process, start shutting down. We start erecting walls. And this is not done in a negative way. It's just done that our caregivers believe this is the best way that we're supposed to be raised. And I think over time, we begin to get messages that our way of expressing ourselves, the way our being, our way of living in life, or maybe our dreams, our aspirations may not fit with our caregivers. And then we get subtle or sometimes not so subtle messages that these are wrong or that we should keep it to ourselves. And I remember I have two children, a son who's 29 and a daughter who's 31. When my son was young, I lived in Australia at the time, and my son was playing rugby. I think he may have been, maybe 8 years old. And some of the boys were really getting rough and tumbled and getting injured. And I remember one little boy was crying, and I heard a man next to me says, oh, give him some time, and after a while he won't feel a thing. And I thought, wow, after a while he won't feel a thing. Well, why wouldn't he feel a thing? Because our emotions help us be authentic. And if we get messages that we shouldn't feel, or we should, especially particularly for men, we should suppress our sadness, and women often get messages to suppress anger, that we start blocking. We put blockages up to our own selves and who we really are. And after a while, we forget, and I think you said, we forget that we become this mask. We forget that we are living a life of baloney. And somewhere along the line, we get a wake-up call to say, this is just a bunch of baloney. And who are you? And who do you represent? What do you feel? What do you experience? What's in your heart? What's in your voice? How do you communicate your true self? And that's when we start waking up to say, wow, how can I really be real? How can I be authentic? And I use a language, since my book is The Roadmap Home, I talk about a language of being at home with ourselves. So, Harry, I see authenticity is when I'm authentic, I can really feel at home with myself. And when I'm not authentic, I just don't feel like I'm at home. And you probably have these experiences that when you're with a relationship or with someone and you feel really at home with them, you know you can express yourself, you can be true to yourself. And then there are some relationships you just feel awkward. You just don't feel like you can be yourself and you're not at home. And I think this is where our quest, and the quest is to be at home with ourselves as frequently and as often as possible, even if it's uncomfortable. Sometimes we have to learn to be comfortably uncomfortable, because if I'm feeling angry at somebody, at something that somebody has done, and to be authentic, I have to say, you know, what you're doing or saying really upsets me. That's really being authentic, and it may create some disturbance, some discomfort. But really, I think that's really the only way to really be alive and present in the universe. So, and I think that's a great calling for all of us to at least show ourselves. And I guess as we say in California, just showing up.
That's fabulous. You know, what I find interesting, Leonard, is that the different elements of the society that we live in expect different things from us. So, you know, if I go to a meeting in Wall Street, I have to have a certain persona.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I go to my church, that persona wouldn't be welcome in my church, so I put on a different one. And so as I wear these different personas, after a while, I have no idea who I am.
And, you know, that's a great point, Harry. I think ultimately, whether we're working on Wall Street or working in a construction job or as a teacher or a policeman, whatever occupation we are, we still have to stay anchored to ourself and really know what our beliefs are, what our values are, really staying connected to our body, staying connected to our emotions. And in my scheme of things, I see that there are six areas that we're really called to be at home, and that's with our body, with our emotions, with our thoughts or beliefs, with our heart or relationships, with our voice and communication, and the last is with our vision and our dreams. And when we start losing connection or getting out of alignment with any of those six areas, we start becoming inauthentic. So let's say if I'm on Wall Street or whatever, and my body's revolting at what I'm experiencing or what I'm doing, well, if I can either suppress it and numb myself to the experience and then start bringing on the baloney, or I can stay present with the discomfort and try to understand what the discomfort is trying to tell me. Because the discomfort is saying something to me, and it's an important message to pay attention to. And often we quickly suppress, we push down our feelings, we push down our experiences to try and adapt and accommodate to the outside world. And in the process, we lose something very important, and that is our true self.
Now, in your many years of psychotherapy, I'm sure you've had many clients have experienced this disconnect from their true selves. For the folks who are on the call today and who may listen to this later, the impact of the disconnect can be pretty considerable. What types of things have you experienced working with your clients? And for the folks who are listening to this, what can you suggest would be appropriate techniques to explore, you know, the nature of the disconnect and how to get back to their core self or their true self?
That's a great question, Harry, again. You're a man of great questions. I have always I've always learned, and I love the way your mind works. Let me give you some examples. Often in life, if we experience traumas, and sometimes in experiencing traumas, it could be neglect or abuse, abandonment, that somehow we have to move into a coping strategy. And that coping strategy may be shock. Let's say if I'm in a very difficult situation, I must have to go into shock to cope. What we sometimes forget is that critical situation dissipates and dissolves, but I'm still walking around in shock. And so my coping mechanism in a very difficult situation may end up becoming a life pattern. And that's something that we have to learn to recognize and correct. And I'd like to use my own personal life because really, I believe people become psychotherapists because we need 40 hours of therapy a week. And it's really our, well, I mean, I don't know of any therapist who isn't a therapist because they really need some help. And so I'm just more, maybe a little bit more open. This is, well, I have learned so much about my life. And I grew up in a family where my father left the family when I was young, and my mother was a single mom raising four kids.
Oof.
And there was a time that after my father left, my mother didn't think she was able to manage us. So she took my brother, two sisters, and myself to an orphanage with the prospect that we would actually might live there. And it wasn't the most fun experience for a summer Sunday excursion. But again, the message I really quickly learned that, wow, you know, home could be lost at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And I started developing all these coping mechanisms, you know, silence, depression, denial, really shutting down. And so I started really learning about inauthenticity because I had to adapt and survive. That was my modus operandi. So I knew very much about survival and about adaptation. But what I did not realize until I became a psychotherapist and realized the impact of neglect and abandonment and abuse, that often we lose our connection with our true self. And I had shut down my connection with my body, my emotions, my feelings, even my vision, my heart. My heart had closed in because I thought I might get wounded again. And I had to become aware that I was shut down, that I was living an inauthentic life. I really wasn't present. I was just coping, surviving, adapting. And I think the first stage that we all have to go through is to realize that we are living baloney. To use your phrase, Harry, we are living a mask, that we've somehow, this mask that we are wearing is really about all the conditioning that we've taken on and all about survival. And then once we realize that, then we can say, you know, I don't have to just survive. I can actually go back and find who I am and find out what it is that I really am called to do in this world, because I believe we all have a calling to give a magnificent contribution to the world. All of us do. And if only we can go back, we can really, we can discover that. And I do believe out of our deepest wounds comes our greatest gifts. And my greatest gift was a quest. And my quest was to find home. And so here out of my family background, it says, wow, I had to find out, what is home? What is home all about? And it's a different language than authenticity, but it's the very same thing, Harry, as you and I have talked about. To really be at home in myself, to really be real, be authentic. That's really the quest that I have, and really my goal whenever I work with anybody, who usually comes to me because they've been so shut down and learned to live an inauthentic life, and often anxiety and depression and symptoms are trying to give them wake-up calls to say, wake up, wake up. Become more authentic. And really, these symptoms are just wake-up calls, and I try to help them come to the realization that once they see this as a wake-up call, they're being called to go within and find their genius inside. And that's really what I try to do with people that I work with, and that's been a huge healing aspect of my own life.
What I find interesting about what you just said, Leonard, a number of things, actually. One of them that struck me when you talked about the unique miracle that each of us on this planet are, you know, 6.5 billion miracles, each person with a unique combination of gifts and strengths, and talents, life context, all of these things. And what's interesting about that, what I find fascinating about it is, for many people who are trying to, you know, present this persona that will please the world, by doing so, as you just so aptly described, they actually deny the world of their gifts because they're so busy trying to package the gifts as they think the rest of the world wants them presented. And
That's so true.
So she described. I was going to
kind of piggyback on that, Harry, because I immediately think of a famous phrase from one of the Star Trek movies. And I think Kirk was talking to Spock. And I think Spock said, the needs of the many are greater than the needs of the one. And then I think Kirk responded, well, that's because the needs of the one are greater than the needs of the many. And when I think about that, it's both, those are both true. The needs of the many are indeed greater than the needs of the one. Therefore, each of us must find our true self. We must find that dream, that passion, that destiny, that internal gift, that genius that we have to move forward. Because then when I'm able to do that, and I satisfy the needs of the one, I'm able to contribute to the needs of the many.
And that's a perfect segue to this thought, and I welcome your thought on this, Leonard. When I finally decided that I was going to follow embark on this quest to be authentic, to find out who I was, it seemed for a while that my world turned upside down. And, you know, because a lot of the things I did on Wall Street came naturally to me. And, you know, I received all the awards and the accolades and all that stuff, but I didn't care for that. And so when I decided, you know, I'm going to do what I like to do and what resonates with my core belief structure, all of a sudden, my world devolved into two camps. One camp said, you're insane. And the other camp said, finally, you're finally doing what we always thought you would do. But I found that it was an interesting challenge first, and I found myself often second-guessing myself. You know, is this really what I should be doing? I mean, I know it feels right, but it doesn't always seem to come as easy as the stuff that I know wasn't me. And do you find, Leonard, that some people, when they embark on this journey home, that if they hit a couple of those stumbling blocks, they might find it easier to fall back to the old patterns?
We do tend to like our old habits. Think of we've all had this experience where we go to a conference or a seminar or a workshop, and we find our seat, and we come back the next day, and where do we go? To the very same seat. We don't go to a different seat, or we tend to go to the people we met, as opposed to, hey, this is a new day. Why not try a new seat? Why not meet some new people? I think we tend to move back into habitual, comfortable patterns rather than embracing the discomfort that we might have in moving around. And I think it is uncomfortable. It is a bit like swimming upstream against society, because there are some insane facets about our society when you think about it. Think of some of the things that we're asked. If somehow you bump into somebody and say, how you doing? Well, isn't there immediate emphasis, I'm fine, even though I might be feeling really depressed, I may be really down, I may have feeling injured, my body maybe, how you feeling? Oh, I'm feeling really good, as opposed to just saying how you're really feeling and what's really going on with you. And I think we don't really allow ourselves space to be honor whatever a person is at, truly at, because we want them to be a certain way. Even in sometimes the New Age movement, let's be positive. Let's have positive affirmations. Let's think only good thoughts, which is great because we can use our mind that way. But sometimes, I don't know, there are some days that my negativity kind of kicks in. And so for me, I have to say, hey, Leonard, what's all this negativity going on about? Oh, let me stop and let me just see if I can process it. What is going on? And in our society, we don't really allow ourselves space to really, really just be present with whatever is, because whatever is really important.
You know, when you made the observation about automatic responses, it reminded me of a situation about 10 years or so ago. I was walking down the hallway of a client on Wall Street. And as I was walking in the hallway, someone that I knew approached me. And as we passed each other, he said, now I hadn't spoken to him, but he said, I'm good, thanks. How are you? So the automatic response was so heavily programmed into him that he was ready to offer the response even before I said, how are you doing?
Yeah.
Which is really sad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Imagine what it would be like, Harry, for all of us to really just practicing. Let's say take one day in our life. It could be on a Sunday, to really practice just being true to ourselves. So you wake up in the morning, and let's say your true self says, you know, I just want to go, I want to sleep in a little bit. Okay. Or I want to go out. Or you meet somebody, and, you know, you're really just practicing speaking your truth. Just to tell people what you really think and feel. Wow, wouldn't it be rather remarkable?
You know, someone once asked me what I thought of what I thought the world would look like if everybody followed their passion and became authentic. And my reply was we'd have millions more bad poets in the world. But, you know, it's interesting, Leonard, and I'll share a personal example of our relationship. You know, for male friends of mine that I feel close to, and I include you in that group, Leonard, it's not unusual for male friends who are close to each other to say, you know, as a call ends or as an interaction ends, for one person to express their love for the other person. And, you know, I know in my world, well, I say my world, in my previous world, the whole Wall Street world, if one guy said to another guy, I love you, then the perception around the table is, okay, so this must be either his brother, his father, or his significant other. And they jump to this conclusion, and a lot of people can't accept that to be authentic and to express gratitude between people, it's okay to say that. And, you know, again, that goes back to this whole notion of, you know, even if I have the deepest respect for someone, I better make sure I express it in a way that I think my peers will accept. And I think all of these little tiny things, you know, our notion of, well, I have to do this to impress this person, and I have to do this to align with this person, and I have to do this, et cetera, et cetera. I think it creates a really complicated life.
Yeah, you know, and I think what we do tend to do is we relate out of the masks that we have, out of the conditioning. I believe that we really are spiritual beings. We're having a human excursion, and yet we act as if that's not there. And it seems, I think that's the insanity about the world we live, is that we actually believe that, I don't know, we just are human beings but don't have this inner spirit or soul or whatever people call it, this connection with one another. And I've had the good fortune in my 35 years as a psychotherapist to work with people and see the tremendous interconnections of life that exist. And for us to think that we are solitary, alone, I think, wow, that's insane. We really are all interconnected with one another. We just don't realize it. And when you think about it, it's a bit like us saying that the Earth somehow revolves around the sun, but they don't have any influence on each other, that the Earth doesn't have an interaction with the sun, or even on a micro level with the molecular structures, that, you know, atoms, electrons, and neutrons have their patterns. But then we look at humanity and each individual. It's as if each one of us is separate, not having any kind of relationship with one another. So like Harry, your and my relationship, as you say, there was no coincidence. There was a series of events that brought you and I together so that we can interact with each other. So you really expanded my concept of authenticity. All your knowledge and understanding of authenticity expanded what I had to my perceptions, and you got me thinking in a different way as well. And hopefully I contributed to your thinking in terms of maybe looking at home in another way of well. So we use different language, but the same kind of a concept. And you and I would not be talking on this show right now if it wasn't for these whole series of coincidences, which really weren't coincidences. They were really kind of all working together in some mysterious way that we might not really fully know, to bring us all to talk right now at this moment, and even everybody who's out there listening. You're out there listening because you're meant to be part of this whole organization and to listen to the words that are going on to see what resonates and what doesn't resonate. Because all of you listeners, really, you have, I believe there's two elements, something that resonates, so I may be saying something, Carrie may be saying something, and wow, that really resonates with me. Or you feel dissonance. Oh, that's a bunch of horseshit, you know, and that just doesn't work. But both of those are very important to say, well, what is resonating and what is the dissonance, so that each of us can be touched and moved to shape our lives, to expand our lives, because we're meant to be more expansive. And so I think that's kind of this whole process. And to go back to your earlier comment about men saying, I love you, or whatever, I think it's bizarre that, again, we don't share that more often. Now, growing up as a kid, I never heard the words, I love you, from either my mother or my father. Words just not used. So when my kids were born, my intention was to really make sure they heard, I love you. And so whenever I talk to them now, we always end our conversation, love you. Yeah, love you too. And having that really a big part of our life. And I'm trying to, in the communities I belong to, is to say to other people, you know, I love you. And originally, there's a bit of, wow, is this a romantic, I love you? And I says, no, this is, I love your spirit. And wouldn't it be great if somehow we were able to share that more with one another? Wow, what a concept.
You know, Leonard, as you say that, I'm wondering how many people, male friends and associates that I know, who will hear this at some point. I want to see how many of them send me a note and say, I love you, in the email at some
point. Yeah, that would be interesting.
You know, you said something interesting, Leonard, and you talked about the expansive nature of our lives. I find, and I welcome your thoughts on this, the people who are most authentic, or who try to be authentic, tend to have what I will call action-packed, event-filled lives, meaning because they tend to follow their intuition more, or they accept things around them are happening and they intentionally reach out and take a hold of things more, that they tend to, and I'll use the word cram, I don't mean that in a negative way, but they tend to squeeze a lot more stuff into their lives. Do you find that to be the case?
Absolutely. I think of Abraham Maslow, the psychologist, and his hierarchy of needs, and the final on this pyramid of needs, the very pinnacle, the apex of the pyramid, is self-actualization. And self-actualization means that I'm really living my true self. I'm trying to actualize all my potential. I'm not living as a mask, but I'm really organically expanding. I am really actualizing who I really am. And that is really, I think, our quest. Our quest really is to move us to that particular height where we can just actualize all of our potential. And yeah, the higher up that pyramid we go, we become more active, we become more productive, more creative, more alive, more stimulated. I mean, life becomes really exciting. I mean, we wake up, how can we? We're like little children. We're like innocent little children, so excited about waking up because we've got a new opportunity. I believe that's really how we're all meant to be. When I'm blocked, when my energies, when I'm living a life of baloney, then I'm thinking, why the hell do I want to get up this morning? To live more baloney? Or do I really want to be my true self? And when I'm living my true self, wow, life becomes so dynamic, so exciting. And that's really the way we're all meant to live our life, like little children.
You know, Maslow said, and I may or may not get this quote right, you would be a better student of Maslow than I would, but he said, ultimately, the search for identity is, in essence, the search for one's own intrinsic values. And for me, that speaks of authenticity, that in order for me to know who I am, that I need to search for and embrace those values that make up my core belief structure. And so for people who, you know, have an internal structure, but they live based on an outside persona or facade, I think, you know, it creates such a structural tension. I know when I finally said, you know what, this is me, and if you don't like it, you can leave it, there was a great load lifted off my shoulders. And, you know, for me...
And you know, Harry, I think the beautiful thing is, when you think of relationships, one of the difficulty about relationships, intimate relationships, is you have two people wanting to change the other person. Rather than saying, I am here to help you be the best person you can be. You have two people really into a power struggle who says, I want you to be just like I want you to be. Or, I want you to be the person that makes me feel really good. As opposed to, listen, I'm here to really help you be authentic and live your own truth. Now, to me, that's really, isn't that an incredible way of being and helping each other in relationships?
Oh, I mean, it's for people who have experienced it, once you've experienced it, there's no way you can go back.
Yeah, and so like with you, Harry, my goal with you, whenever we relate and to communicate, and sometimes I get out of contact. You know, sometimes I act, sometimes I get into my baloney. And when I'm into my baloney, as a friendship, I want you to say, Leonard, you're into your baloney. You're into your story. Hello. And then you do me a favor by helping me get back on track. And I endeavor to do the same with you, Harry. He says, hang on, Harry, I think you're going off on a tangent there. Like, let's just let's stay a little bit more present with what's going on here. And I think that's our really goal, is if we can help each other try to be as authentic and relating to each other as possible. Wow, relationships just,
you know,
so rich.
It reminds me of an interaction you and I had a few months ago. And you and I were talking about something, and you had asked me for my thought on something, and I switched into ultra-left-brained lecture boy. and I was going on and on and on, and you were like, yeah, and I'll never forget it. You said, hang on a minute, Harry, because this is not the Harry that I know. And you sensed, and I had inadvertently, through habit, put on that facade of, okay, you know, the master is here, and I will now articulate my masterful thoughts, which is not me. But you called me on it, which I'm grateful for. And that's what it is to have an authentic relationship.
And, you know, you did the same thing with me, Harry, because we were online, we were talking, and we had our video camera, and we were talking, but I got waylaid, and I started doing something else. And you said, hey, Leonard, where are you? You don't seem like you're – and I said, oops, yeah, oh, I think I left the relationship for a while. So, you know, this is done in a spirit of love and a spirit of friendship to really help one another. It's not to say, hey, I'm going to slap you down. It's really saying, hey, we're here to help each other. And I think that's, and then I think love and relationships just deepen from this whole process. Don't you think, Harry?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But,
and the other thing is, this is amazing. The thing that really blows my mind, Harry, is that, I don't know, how long have we known each other? What, 6 months, maybe longer?
Well, we got really engaged about 8 months ago.
All right, let's say 8 months ago. And you and I have never met face-to-face. That's the thing that's incredible. Here I'm living in Southern California. You're living in Newfoundland. And we've never even met face-to-face, but yet we've had this incredible relationship of mine that's been going on across the country. You don't have to be present face-to-face to really have an authentic relationship or build an authentic friendship.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know... I have to be careful not to get too passionate about this now, because I get really passionate about this. But the thing is this, Leonard.
Go passion.
You and I.
Go passion, Harry.
you and I are open to exploration of our own authentic selves, and we are open lovingly to exploring the authenticity of others. So the interaction... The events around the interaction become, and you can use whatever terminology is the popular stuff. You can say, oh, I have aha moments or insight or these brilliant flashes or what have you. But it's one of those things where when you have an authentic interaction with somebody, you're always the better for it. And I don't know about you, Leonard, but anytime I have an authentic interaction with you or with other people who are authentic, it puts things in my brain that I want to go share with others. And so the energy builds. Do you know what I mean?
The energy builds, and after a while, I believe it's like eating quality food. after a while, when you eat quality food, you don't want to touch junk food because you know what quality food and nutrition does to your body and how you respond to just phenomenal good food. And is that, do I want to go eat fast food junk? No. I really want to just enjoy this quality food. And what happens then is that we start looking for relationships that we can have more of this quality time. And I know in my life, if somehow I'm in an interaction, it's not that quality. I have many choices. I can choose to try to make it a bit more quality. So even if I'm at the supermarket and I'm buying groceries and Linda is the clerk, I say, "Hi, Linda, how are you? What's your day going like?" You know, so I can have an interaction. I can make connection with Linda, the supermarket person. Or if I go to the library and I talk to somebody, you know, I can have authentic interactions throughout the entire day if I choose to. And as we do that, as I said, I think it's like eating really healthy or exercising or really taking good care of ourselves. Wow, we want more of it. And then I get really hungry if I don't get that in my life. But again, you know, I'm coming from a place where I didn't have that as a kid. And so that lack that I didn't have really, really created this hunger that, hey, I had enough of this baloney growing up as a kid. I'm 62 years old. Do I want to go through life with more baloney? I says, hey, I ain't got time for baloney. I want some good stuff.
Yep. I'm going to throw out a theory, Leonard, and I welcome your thought to comment on it. You know, at the beginning of this call, the question was put out, you know, what is the result of not being authentic? And I'm going to make a statement.
Yeah, that was an excellent question. I thought that was a great question. I think Jackie asked it at the beginning. He says, well, how does being inauthenticity or inauthentic, what does it do? I thought that was... I'm still waiting for you to answer it, Harry.
Well, here's my thought. I look at, for example, our financial crisis in the last year. And I think about how it incubated on Wall Street. And I've lived the Wall Street life for many years. I know what it's like in the boardroom when people make decisions to make money, everything else be damned. So I've been in that room. I know what it's like when people work there and they live a lifestyle to keep up with everyone else around them. And then I know, you know, so then they need a lifestyle where they need the same level house as their neighbor or their peers. They need the same cars. They need the same, you know, the baubles of life. And then other people see that and they say, well, if they're going to have it, I need it too, because if I don't get that, then I may be considered unworthy because my own core values aren't important enough. What I need to show is that I can keep up with everybody else. And I think it trickles into relationships. You know, does my spouse look pretty enough, handsome enough? You know, are they intelligent enough? And I think it ripples out all over the place. Politicians, for example, and I'm not knocking politicians, there are some great ones, but there are a number of them who are in it for reasons other than which we elected them in the first place. And so they see opportunities to fix things, and they say, you know, I'll leave that for the next person.
Yeah, and you know,
and
politicians have a very difficult time being authentic because if they really were being authentic, they may not get elected or think they don't get elected. And they're kind of caught up into trying to create these spins, to spin everything.
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, I blogged about that a couple of months ago because it so bothered me. But I guess my thought, Leonard, is I believe, my own personal belief, that being inauthentic has created all of these things now that I won't say are crushing us because that sounds too dramatic and too final, but these things that are squeezing us right now, I believe, are rooted in inauthenticity. And I welcome your thought on that.
Well, let's think of it this way. Imagine if someone said to you, I want you to go through life practicing being a chicken. And it says, okay, all right, so I got to learn how to be a chicken. And so after a while, I'm going to be pecking away at the little gravel on the ground and maybe some insects, you know. And I think to go counter what we're really meant to do means that there's a tremendous penalty we do, a penalty in our body. So our body starts incorporating, our emotions start getting shut down. We start taking on the stress. We may start getting depressed and anxious. Our body creates symptoms. We may start having a host of somatic complaints, headaches, deep cellular struggles and difficulties. So we've got our body, we've got our emotions, our minds. It starts because our mind has to deal with all this baloney. And so, what's our mind going to do but create all these mind traps of baloney? And then our heart's going to be shutting down, so we might have heart attacks more about not being authentic. And in our voice, well, we're going to be constricting our voice because we can't speak our truth, so we're going to start choking ourselves. And if we can't see and give our vision, well, what's happened? We're going to start becoming blind. So if you say, what's the consequence of being authentic? Well, we're going to be blind, not be able to speak. We're going to have heart attacks, our throat, our heart, everything starting shutting down. After a while, then we'll probably pretty well be ready to leave this planet in a very constricted place.
Absolutely. We're almost out of time, Leonard, and I have had an opportunity to read your newest book, and I've been blessed by it. I found it to be a life-transforming book, and as a matter of fact, I've read it several times. I know you're launching your book tomorrow. Could you give just the title of your book and generally what the book is about and some thoughts on it?
Sure. Title of the book is The Roadmap Home, Your GPS to Inner Peace. Now, the GPS stands for the Guiding Power of Spirit. Mm-hmm. And so it's a self-help spiritual book, basically saying that really all of us have this internal guidance system. And we really are living authentically and true to ourselves. We really are in line with our internal GPS, our guidance system, which will direct us where we need to go, who we need to talk to, what we need to do in our life, what our vision, destiny is all about. And the book goes through stages of awakening. So from meditation to becoming an orphan to the wake-up calls and signposts we have, trying to stay awake, and having to go through healing wounds so we can break free and move to a heartbeat of connection. So the whole purpose of the book is to help us walk through this stages of awakening that all of us are going through in a process. So that's basically what I do. And the whole book is about having mapping exercises to get people to return home. Basically, it's a roadmap. The book is a roadmap to help individuals return home to inner peace, and I believe that's really all of our calling. We're meant to find that inner peace which resides within every one of us, but we do need a roadmap and a GPS, and that's what the whole purpose of the book is. The launching is, we're having the online launching, which is really quite exciting. If I can mention, you can go to www.theroadmaphome.com, and there's a phenomenal offer tomorrow. Those who go on and purchase the book tomorrow, there's like 80 gifts. And Harry, you're one of those who have gifted something, so they get over 80 gifts from authors, experts, just a phenomenal array of e-books and courses and consultations just for the price of a book, of one book. So I'm very excited about this whole thing. My quest is to get the message out. And that's my intention.
I mean, your book is profound, and as I've said, I blogged about your book some time ago. What makes it profound as well is your life context resonates with the reader. And, you know, this is not an academia-type book. This is a book written by a man on a personal quest. And I think readers can really resonate and identify with that quest, and they can see themselves in the stories that you share in your book.
Thank you, Harry. And, you know, my intention is I'm like everybody else. I'm no better, no worse. I'm just like everybody else with my own baloney. And my goal is to say, hey, this is my baloney. This is what happened to me. And this is how I created a life of baloney. And, wow, how can I make a change in my life? And so these are the principles. And I've been very blessed, as I said, by being a therapist for 35 years. And even my own personal life really helped me become very compassionate to anybody who's lost their home. because, hey, I've been there, and it's something that I continue to work with. And I believe anybody who is trying to help others, I think we're here to be authentic and let other people know we're just like everybody else. We're all students and teachers helping each other.
Just before I pass control back to the moderator, I also want to mention to folks listening that you and I will be traveling together in the spring, and we're going to be talking about this at a number of cities in Canada, the U.S., and I understand Australia.
That's right. We're not just going to be talking, Harry. We're going to get people really doing and experiencing. So I'm really excited about this. This is going to be fun.
I don't know who's going to enjoy it more, the people that join us or us. I think it's going to be profound. And for anyone who's interested, there's a link on my website. We've tentatively titled it The Journey Home, A Quest for Authenticity. And Leonard and I will have sharing experiences with a number of folks across Canada and the U.S. and Australia around how do we get back, you know, why is it important we get back to our authentic self and how do we do it.
And the incredible
Leonard, thing, I really, really am grateful to you for your time tonight.
Hey, thank you, Harry. I'm very grateful for being here as well.
Harry, is there any other information you'd like our listeners to know about how they could contact you or when you are in the coaching gym?
The best way to find me would be my website, www.harrytucker.com. Folks can also send me an email. My email address is pretty easy. It's harry@harrytucker.com. And I'm still working with Peter and some folks regarding some of the things we'll be doing in the coaching gym. So if anyone would like to follow up with me, your best bet is to email me.
Great. I want to thank you and you, Leonard, for a really fascinating hour of conversation and not only insights into living an authentic life, but also the insights into your relationships between each other. It was just fascinating. So I want to thank you for this, and a special thanks to our listeners for being a part of today's teleclass and Just About Perfect.
Thank you.
Can I say one thing to Leonard?
Yeah.
Hey, Leonard?
Yes, Harry.
I love you, man.
I love you too, Harry.
That's a perfect way to end. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.